Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Happy Friday. And Jim, as always, good news, bad news, crazy news in our martinis. Our good news comes from the director of pediatric neurology at Johns Hopkins University, who was the featured speaker at the National Prayer Breakfast on Thursday, with President Obama sitting just two seats away. Dr. Carson talked about a number of different things that clearly did not sit well with the president if you watched the video. First of all, he talked a little bit about taxes from a biblical perspective, saying God, who is more fair than anyone, requested a tithe of your crops, whether you had a down year, whether you had a bumper crop. It was always the 10% tithe. He says we shouldn't be wedded to a specific percent necessarily, but then he used that to talk about the progressive tax system.
So there must be something inherently fair about proportionality. You make $10 billion, you put in a billion. You make $10, you put in one. Of course, you got to get rid of the loopholes. But now some people say, they say, well, that's not fair because it doesn't hurt the guy who made $10 billion as much as the guy who made 10. Where does it say you have to hurt the guy? He just put $1 billion in the pot.
And then he also talked about political correctness and why he thinks it's a terrible, terrible thing for the national discourse.
PC is dangerous because, you see, this country, one of the founding principles was freedom of thought and freedom of expression. And it muffles people. It puts a muzzle on them. And at the same time, keeps people from discussing important issues while the fabric of their society is being changed.
Jimmy never raised his voice, never pointed his finger, never even stared down the president as he made his points. Just an excellent, straightforward approach to some of the things that are really frustrating to a lot of conservatives. And it was just very well and very clearly delivered.
Exactly. I'm kind of struck by it. You're looking at this and like, man, how did this guy get in? I kind of wondering that at the National Prayer Breakfast, there'd be this. Because what's fascinating is there's nothing explicitly political in anything he said. It's just kind of about values and how you look at things like government and how you look at things like public discourse. But clearly, the president's views on what constitutes a fair level of taxation and what the wealthy owe to the country, or I should say, what the wealthy owe to the government, and the attitude of political correctness. I've never seen President Obama speak against the notion of political correctness and the idea that, you know, all forms of speech should be protected, no matter how unpopular they are. I think you point to the Muhammad video is precisely the opposite viewpoint, that this administration does not believe that you have a right to say something that offends oodles and oodles of the world Muslims who are just looking for a reason to get pissed off. So, kudos to Dr. Benjamin Carson. A fascinating experience. I'm sure it also says something probably about the bubble of the president that he encounters that viewpoint so rarely. Out of curiosity, Greg, is Benjamin Carter, is it Carter or Carson?
Carson.
Any interest in running for president, by any chance?
Well, he's in Maryland, so he probably wouldn't carry his own state.
First of all, are you sure? And then secondly, he's a doctor, right? He runs the pediatric state, right? You know? That's a pretty distinguished resume. I'd be intrigued by that. So I'm just putting that out there for people to speculate.
Well done by Dr. Carson. Certainly giving, hopefully, the president something to think about. Although I think by about halfway through, the president was on his BlackBerry doing his best to ignore what the guy was saying. But anyway, on to martini number two now. And Jim, we always knew there were a lot of questions, a lot of probably missteps in how the administration handled the Benghazi terrorist attack back on 9/11 of last year. Yesterday, I think we were even more disgusted and more appalled by how it all went down. Here's a quick montage of Defense Secretary Leon Panetta under questioning from New Hampshire Senator Kelly Ayotte at yesterday's Senate Armed Services hearing on this subject.
So he didn't ask you what ability we had in the area and what we could do?
No, he relied on both myself as secretary and on General Dempsey's capabilities.
Did you have any further communications with him that night?
No.
Did you communicate with anyone else at the White House that night?
No.
No one else called you to say, how are things going?
No.
What assets we had available and how quickly they could respond and what we could do to help those individuals there.
I think the biggest problem that night, Senator, was that nobody knew really what was going on there.
And there was no follow-up during the night, at least from the White House directly?
No, there wasn't.
And then Ted Cruz got out of Panetta that he never talked to Hillary Clinton at all that night, and neither did the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. So, Jim, 3 a.m. phone calls, forget that. The 5 p.m. phone call wasn't answered. Obama and Hillary Clinton completely off the job here, which makes this even more pathetic.
Well, it was late, you know, Greg. Come on, cut them some slack. You know, they work, 9 to 5 as hard as anybody. So, and we have issued memos to al-Qaeda saying to please make all future terror attacks during normal business hours and not during federal holidays either. So, no, really kind of shocking to hear this. And what was really kind of shocking was how much, like, I'm sitting there thinking, doesn't that seem weird to Panetta? Doesn't that seem odd to General Dempsey? Don't any of these guys seem kind of strange? Like, you've got a deadly attack on a U.S. ambassador and our staff out there right after, you know, we'd had that previous event in Cairo earlier in the day. Why is this not, you know, a red alert level situation? Why is it not people trying to get people to battle stations? He said, well, we didn't know what was going to happen. Well, no, you never know what's going to happen. No one's expecting clairvoyance. It's just saying, you know, when you see the beginnings of an attack on U.S. diplomatic staff, well, don't you think you should get moving? That everybody should be doing everything they can in case the situation gets much worse instead of, our guy's under attack. Let's see how it goes. It's baffling, and it just kind of feels like the entire government has decided to avert its eyes from the absence of not just the president, but also the Secretary of State from the middle, during the critical hours of a developing crisis. The 3 a.m. ad is now particularly ironic because, you know, obviously the assessment of Obama was correct, but also that Hillary Clinton herself was also not in the loop when one of her people was under attack.
Yeah, hard to believe that anybody can look at that testimony and sense that there was competence during or in the immediate aftermath of that. And as you mentioned, based on what had happened in Cairo earlier in the day, it's especially unconscionable. So on to Martini number 3 now. Jim, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are aware of this horrific sequence of events out in Southern California where this former Los Angeles police officer, Christopher Dorner, just decided to declare war on the LAPD as well as some neighboring police jurisdictions. He's killed a number of officers. He's still on the run as we record this on Friday, late Friday morning. And what we do know now, though, as the hunt for him continues, is that he released this manifesto at a time when he extols his great affection for President Obama. He hates the National Rifle Association, loves Piers Morgan. It's just interesting that after all of these other attacks where the liberal media have come up with the faintest, most pathetic shreds to try and link conservatives to these mass shootings, now they say when their names are attached to it, wow, we can't be politicizing these tragedies when Piers Morgan has done nothing but politicize the tragedy since Sandy Hook. And all of a sudden now they are getting a little bit of a idea of what it's like to have their name thrown into something like this. We don't blame Piers Morgan. We don't blame President Obama for any of this. But it's a good lesson to them that trying to find a political hook in all of this is pathetic and is offensive to those who are really hurt and injured here.
Yeah, there's two bizarre, phenomenon to this. And first of all, I hope they catch this guy, bring him to justice one way or the other. Just a nightmarish, scenario out in California. The first is, yes, this extraordinary double standard in which the Tucson shooter, that folks like Paul Krugman were just asserting from day one that a map on Sarah Palin's Facebook page had somehow motivated him. And turned out the guy was very disturbed and extreme schizophrenic, voices in his head, et cetera. That you couldn't apply a logic or a rational form of, motivation to why he decided to shoot Gabby Giffords and everyone else that day. And we really do a disservice to the truth and a disservice to justice when we try to shoehorn a standard issue political motive to a person who is clearly deranged. No, this person, this guy out in California does not speak for modern liberalism. I think the double standard here is very illustrative of how the media treats these things differently. Now, the next thing that is kind of bizarre about this and frustrating about this is that this is I read the manifesto and then I felt awful about reading the manifesto because this is clearly a person who has, all kinds of grievances against the world. complains about a stolen watch, and you know, every beef he's ever had, he goes into it. He decides to list every celebrity woman he finds attractive. It's almost like a long rambling blog post. And what I am bothered by is that, you know, before this guy started shooting people, I didn't have to give a damn about him. I didn't have to care. And now everybody and their brother is checking out this manifesto, morbid curiosity out of, you know, trying to figure out what's going on in his head. Why is he trying to kill police officers? Why is he trying to kill innocent people? And I just kind of wonder how many other disturbed individuals are looking at this and saying, aha, this is how you get attention in this country. If you feel ignored, if you feel like all of your grievances have been dismissed by a cold, cruel world, well, write up all your, you know, everything you've ever wanted to say to the world's attention and then start killing people. And I, you know, I don't begrudge the media for putting this up there. It is news. But I just, the phenomenon, it just feels like it's designed to facilitate copycats. And I wish there was some way we could break the cycle and just ignore gunmen and just refer. You know, notice I very rarely ever will name the gunmen, be it Tucson, be it Columbine, be it Virginia Tech, Aurora. And I'd like to say that's very principled, that I don't want to ever salute any of these people. Their names should be forgotten by history. Other times, Greg, I just can't remember. And it's easier just to call them the gunmen. But nonetheless, I wish there was a way that we could just not pay attention to these people, bring them to justice, and let them be forgotten so that no one else ever decides this is the way to get the infamy and the attention that they so desire.
And it does cut both ways a little bit. As much as it turns my stomach to see how the liberals do this, just this week, you know, you have the guy who pled guilty to shooting up the Family Research Council office. And folks at the FRC, a great organization, have essentially blamed the Southern Poverty Law Center for saying that the FRC is a hate group. Now, the Southern Poverty Law Center is a horrible organization, and they don't improve the discourse in this country at all. But they don't tell this guy to kill anybody. They're not to blame for this. They are cheapening the discourse, certainly, and plenty of other things. But the people who do the violence are responsible for the violence.
Yeah, taking a once noble cause and really trying to paint with such a broad brush. Anybody who, you know, the line of what actually, you know, like most people when they think hate groups think the Klan, and Southern Poverty Law Center has been all too eager to paint other groups that they disagree with as hate groups, when, you know, it strikes me as a very loaded term and something that kind of, you know, brings out very explicit images there. It says something about the discourse in this country, and it's rather bizarre and frustrating that we find this recurring in our politics. What a lovely note to end the week on, huh?
Have a great weekend, everybody.
Yeah.
Wow.
Stay safe. Enjoy the blizzard, Northeasterners.
Yeah, that's going to be fun for those folks up there. We in the D.C. area didn't get any of it yet. Some schools are still on a delay today, so go figure. Jim, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.